to work on the same kind of skills and get the results that you're really looking for. So that's how Masterminds was born. And we provide ABA services right now in New York and New Jersey, and coming soon in Georgia as well. So I just wanted to say a little bit about our history, our background. We've always been motivated to support parents, firstly with our in-home services, and we're constantly looking to provide support and training and whatever we can. So we found Kate, and Kate is so generous to give us some of her time to really discuss finding the joy. Kate is a very, very popular person, especially with her blogs and her new release, Forever Boy, which I'm really excited about. For those of you who are one of the first 25 registrants, you will get an email asking for your mailing address so that we can send it to you. So I'm excited about that. But if you don't have a copy yet, please get one. And what you see today is just going to be a little snippet of what you're going to find. Kate is so real and down to earth and true to her feelings. And I just love your style, Kate.
Thank you.
We're so happy to have you here. And if you could definitely take over and let us hear some of your thoughts and part of your journey.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so I have a presentation, and it's a PowerPoint presentation, and then I'll be talking with you throughout the whole thing, and then I have two videos that I show about midway, and the second one is my viral video, and you'll see me, well, you won't see me, but I'll be hiding under my table while it's playing, because it makes me super cringy, but I'm going to show it, because I think it really highlights the caregiver crisis that we have right now when we don't support parents. So I'll prepare you when that comes. Grab your tissues. Okay. So I share my screen. And if everyone can give me a heads, if I can get a... Okay. Can I get a thumb up from Adina if you can see?
Sure.
Presentation? Good. Okay. So I call my presentation The Secret World of Autism. And I have said that phrase since the very, very beginning of my journey, because I, throughout all of Cooper's diagnosis, I continued to work and have this life outside of my home. But as our world got smaller and smaller, no one had any idea what was happening at home. And when we went through our hardest aggression days, I wrote a virally piece for my Facebook page where I got in my car after Cooper had hurt himself and hurt our family and hurt our home. And I drove around for a while and I called my friend Courtney and I drove through my neighborhood and families were barbecuing and grilling and waving and pushing their kids with strollers. And I was like, they have no idea what's going on inside closed doors with three locks on every door and alarms on the windows. And it was a really just kind of powerful moment for me that we have to bring this secret world out into the open, because people need to know what's happening so we can support families. So at a high level, I am a mom and a wife first. I like to say I have four kids. Cooper's 11, Sawyer's 9, Harbor's 3, and my daughter just turned 1. Four kids is as crazy as you can imagine. There is never a dull moment here. My husband, Jamie, is an insurance agent. He is self-employed. He works from home a lot of the time, as do I. So I like to say we're always working and we're always parenting. So we're kind of always failing and always winning at the same time. There's really no balance. And I've been talking to a lot of really popular podcasters lately, like big important people, and they keep telling me that there is no balance. It's just survival. And that made me feel really good about life. I created my blog, Finding Cooper's Voice, in secret from my couch in 2013. Cooper was 2, not diagnosed with anything, but also not speaking, and his delays were becoming really evident. So I started writing because my doctors were dismissing me, family was not seeing it, my husband didn't know how to respond to my manicness. So I just started writing, and I created this WordPress site, and I poured my heart and soul out into it, and no one read it. I think if you looked at my stats, probably 2 people, and it was pretty raw, and it really helped me. So one of the pieces of advice I give to people is you don't have to be a blogger. You don't have to be a writer. You don't even have to, you know, don't have to publish a book, or just get your thoughts out on paper or in video or something. You don't even have to share it, but you have to get this stuff out. It'll really help you heal. I then launched my Facebook page and Instagram page in 2017 and never expected to go viral, never expected to have a following, didn't think anyone would care what I had to say. When I learned that what I was saying, you know, was controversial to some, it was really quite shocking. I didn't know that I was saying anything. I mean, saying that, you know, I was sad my son had never said mom, or that I was scared of who would care for him after I was gone. I didn't know that those were controversial things. So that was kind of a shock for me. I went viral after 3 or 4 different videos. And now, actually, I'm almost at 1 million between Facebook and Instagram, which is, that number blows my mind. During COVID, I had a baby and I founded a nonprofit, The More Than Project. I like to say that those are my big 2 accomplishments. And I wrote and published my first book. It's called Forever Boy, and I'll talk a little bit about that too. This is my website. So if you're new to me, pop on my website. You can read blogs written by me, other people. My story is about Cooper, but there is autism in girls, autism in teens, young adults, older adults, and I try to share all of those stories. So pop over there if you want to learn, or if you want to educate someone in your life. So say you have grandma who thinks autism is just bad behavior, or someone that you just really need to understand, share a blog. It's a great way to help educate people. This is my Facebook page. So when I started looking for books about autism, I remember vividly when Cooper was diagnosed, going into Barnes and Noble and looking at the autism section, which back then was like 2 or 3 books, and they were super clinical, which I'm not sure if anyone kind of can relate to that, where it was like autism is A, B, C, and D. And I was like, well, that's not right. That's not Cooper. So when I decided to start sharing autism, I wanted to share pictures of our life and describe them in a way that makes you feel something. So I think that's why my posts are so relatable, because they're not clinical, they're not black and white, and they talk about all the different ways autism is woven into our life. So sharing a Facebook post is another great way to help educate family, friends, teachers, whoever. So give me a follow if you don't already, and you get to know our family. Here are a few of my viral pieces that I've had. I like to share this one with Jimmy Fallon because I think it's super cool. So Cooper won a contest with the Today Show a couple years ago. I would say maybe, well, when was this? The date's on there. I would say about 4 years ago, where they were running a contest for the cutest mama. And I remember sitting there thinking, my son's nonverbal. This is another thing that we can't participate in. And I was like, nope, we're going to do it. And we created a video with him saying mama with his iPad. And it was the cutest thing. And when I submitted it, I was like, I'm going to win this. And I, you know, I was just like, just kind of laughed about it. And we did, we won. And it was just so powerful to educate so many people about different ways of communication, about autism. It was a lot of fun. A couple years ago, I wrote a post about how I parented different. So a couple years ago, I only had 3 children, and my son Cooper was spending time with his grandma, which she is his favorite person after me. And my husband and I took our other 2 kids to the beach. And we spent the whole day, like 10 hours in the sand, building sandcastles, swimming, something that we had never been able to do because Cooper can't go to the beach for that long. And I was able to sit for the first time with my son, who was then, I think he was 2 at the time, 1.5, and build sandcastles. And I wrote this beautiful piece about how lucky I was that Cooper was able to go get spoiled with his grandma and watch Family Feud and, you know, eat donuts and live his best life. And I was able to do this, you know, my other parenting thing, wear my other parenting hat. And again, had no idea that it was controversial and received a bunch of negative feedback about how I obviously don't love Cooper because I was happy parenting my other children in this moment. And I had a low point, and I was like, you know, I'm going to quit this Facebook thing. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of being judged. And Facebook reached out to me and asked me to start a supporter page, which then was relatively new. Now it's not. A lot of the big pages have supporter groups. So I'm like, no one really cares what I have to say. Again, that imposter syndrome that I have all the time. And I'm like, I'm going to do it. And I launched Coop's Troops, which is a private paid subscription group. And I did that again because I could keep out the bullies and the shamers, you know, the people that don't understand our life and just want to be cruel. And it was the best thing I've ever done. It is my safe space. It's a place to ask questions, a place to learn, a place to educate. So if you're a mom, a dad, a grandparent, teacher, therapist, and you're looking for a group, come join this one. You can Zoom. We do in-person events. We're a pretty busy group, but it's a great place to be on the internet. And then I launched my nonprofit in 2021 with my friend Amanda. And I love sharing this because I have this theory that once you make it through your hardest days, whatever that may be, it doesn't have to be autism. It can be anything in your life that you're going through. If you can say that you've made it through, if you've made it through that hardest part, help others. And that's what I'm pouring myself into right now. And Amanda and I launched a nonprofit called the More Than Project, where we're giving back to the people who love our kids, the teachers who help them, the siblings who were born into advocacy, grandparents, caregivers, whoever that may be. We've been having a lot of fun with this. And essentially, at just a core level, we're raising money and we're giving it back. That's what we're doing. This is one of our fun projects. If you're looking for a gift or something to get involved in, the Spotlight Project is so cool. They're in New Jersey, and they are a company that provides employment to adults with disabilities, only disabilities, and pays them livable wages. So we designed a bracelet called the I Am More bracelet. You can see it there. It's pink and blue. It's beautiful. And these are the adults that are making it. You can see how they're doing a visual, they're visually planning. And what's so fun is the lady who founded the company said that in the beginning, many of these adults had to use larger beads or, you know, have things really broken down. Now that they've been with this company for a while, they're doing marketing, they're doing photography, they're doing website management, and they're selling these bracelets. They're proud of their work. So, and the Spotlight Project's giving the More Than Project, my group, $5 for every bracelet. So if you want to just pop on there if you need a gift. I gave these for my teacher gifts this year. It was really fun. And then we have one other partner called Little Rebels with a Cause. And Lauren, who founds this group, she makes t-shirts that are just the cutest thing. You can see her son, Wilson, there. We should be friends. Hashtag inclusion, one of a kind. And they're just a really great group too. So if you're, you know, just sharing some of these companies, if you're, you know, if you're looking for things to purchase, if you're looking for, you know, things to promote, this is just a fun, they're just fun groups and they're doing good work. And that's really what I'm all about. And we're also having our first ever caregiver retreat, which is going to actually be in Wisconsin, but people are flying in from all over. So I just wanted to share this because we're going to bring 150 caregivers to a camp, and we're going to let them sleep and eat and drink and exercise and fish and do whatever they want and just be adults, just be women, just be who they want to be for 2 days. And we're really excited about it. So not saying you have to do this retreat, but moms, when you're watching, you need to remember that you are more than a caregiver. You are more than your child's diagnosis. So find something, and I'm going to laugh when I say this, find a hobby. I don't have any, but find one and remember who you are and what brings you joy. And then I wrote a book. It's called Forever Boy, and it's doing amazing. I, you know, was so scared to tell our story from start to finish, but I knew how powerful it would be for people that feel so alone. And it came out on April 5th. I wrote it during COVID, and I'm so proud of it. Amazon picked it as one of their best books ever, which it's really amazing when you think about, you know, a book about a disability, which is typically perceived as a dark topic or a sad topic, which it doesn't have to be, made an Amazon best pick. So I'm really proud of that. And this is a great book if you need a lifeline, if you want someone to understand, if you're a teacher, just grab this. It's on sale on Amazon right now for $13, and you can learn all about our journey and really feel seen. Okay, so I'm gonna share a video with you to get us started into my presentation. I wanna see if I can do this. Okay, coming back. how do I get to my, oh, I know how to do it. Hold on a second. Okay. Sorry, guys. I'm not a tech person. Okay. Can everyone see a screen up? Okay, good.
Awareness Month, and the CDC says the developmental disability affects one in 44 children in the U.S., with boys four times more likely to be diagnosed than girls. Well, I recently spoke with one mother who is opening up about her son's journey and offering hope to other parents.
The second that I looked down at him when he was born, I just knew there was something about him. But as development went on, he met his physical milestones on time.
It was Kate Swenson's maternal instinct that saved her son, Cooper. While doctors, therapists, and teachers told her some boys are just late bloomers, she felt that a clock was ticking.
No one would really take the what we were seeing seriously, and I was starting to panic because early intervention is key. Like, I want to help him catch up.
According to experts, autism diagnosed before age 5, when the brain is still forming, gives a child the best chance for successful treatment. And Cooper was just shy of his 4th birthday.
How did they diagnose him? I know there's a spectrum.
Yes, he's on the severe end of the spectrum. He's technically nonverbal and
he's smart and he's funny and he's loving.
I honestly felt relief when they told me because I was like, now we know.
The relief was short-lived as Kate and her husband Jamie realized their new normal was about to become a lifelong journey. In her new book, Forever Boy, Kate writes about her son's invisible yet severe disability, one that made him look like every other child, but only on the outside.
Once you got the diagnosis, what did you think your future would look like?
I remember sitting there like, okay, there has to be more. Tell me what to do now. Mm-hmm. No one would.
The struggles were often intense. Cooper didn't speak. He ran away. He banged his head and was aggressive because he couldn't communicate.
I really had some low points where we were dealing with those aggressions and I was really lost.
When Cooper was 2, Kate found out she was pregnant. Her son Sawyer was born without autism.
Did you have reservations about having other children?
We wanted more babies and we didn't want to let this scare us to not having it.
Buzz.
But life with Cooper, who now could not socialize or be outside of their immediate family, drew Kate to a breaking point.
It's just really hard.
She began sharing her struggles in online blogs and videos called Finding Cooper's Voice.
I just want him to be happy. And most of the time, that is enough. The secret world of autism is unbelievable.
Her raw and honest posts helped create a supportive community for other families with autistic children.
You just gotta keep trying. Keep hoping. Realistically hoping.
How do you find the strength and the motivation to keep trying so hard?
I was missing Cooper's life. I was missing it being sad. I was missing it waiting for this to get better. I was like, I have to change the way I look at this.
And with that realization came another seismic change in the Swenson family. Jamie and Kate divorced.
I really felt like I was caring a lot by myself because while my husband was very hands-on, he was just a little bit behind in the autism acceptance, which is very common in couples. So I needed to do it alone.
After 2 years apart, Jamie and Kate remarried and added 2 more children to their family, a son, Harbor, who is 3, and a daughter, Winnie, who is 10 months. Today, after years of intensive schooling, therapy, love, and very hard work, Cooper is an 11-year-old fifth grader now communicating with a tablet. And while it's not his actual voice, the words and phrases are sweet music to Kate's ears.
He's gonna have this great life. He's gonna do so many things, and I hope that the world can learn to see that those things matter too.
You know, everything kind of changed for her when she switched her mindset. Mm-hmm. Not like, how can we fix this, to how can, this is the situation, how do we help him grow?
And she said, and watch him live, as opposed to trying to get to some destination.
Yeah. And that's what you were, when you have a child who's neurodiverse, you're trying to, you can take care of the now, but you're worried about the future. And you're not sure, but, like Kate did, got in there early, mm-hmm. and you can have a great outcome.
Yeah, you certainly can. Really, and she did share opened her.
Okay. Okay, can everyone hear me? So that video to me is just, I think it's super powerful because it shows our family's journey from start to finish or start to current, but it's also positive and educational. And so many times online, things with autism can be dark or sad. And I think it's important to show just Cooper's life is happy and joyful. And yes, he has challenges, but they're not the focus of our life. So about us now, we're just your typical family of six. I like to say that we all settled into autism in our own space and time. The diagnosis was definitely a shock. I mean, well, I wouldn't even say it was a shock. It was just worrisome and scary. And you know, it was just overwhelming in the beginning and for a lot of years. But, and it was for Cooper too. I think that's so important to remember. And now that we, you know, have made it over some of those really hard parts, we're in a really good place. And I just try to share with families that this is hard right now. Things will change. The child you have right now isn't the child that you'll have forever. And I would get so caught up in that. Even right now, my daughter isn't sleeping and I'm like, she's never gonna sleep. But that's not true. So to take you back, Cooper was born on December 6, 2010. Very typical pregnancy. I don't know how it is in your state, but in Minnesota, when you have a child with autism, schools, therapists, social workers, everyone asks about your pregnancy and your delivery. And I always thought that was kind of funny to talk about my vaginal birth with strangers. But I guess it's an important thing to know. And he had a, you know, pretty rocky delivery. He was a really big boy. He was 9 pounds. And we were worried at first. He wasn't breathing. And then came to, Apgar scores were good. But I didn't know the word autism. It never crossed my mind at birth. But looking back, I do believe that he was autistic from the second he was placed in my arms. He seemed confused with the world. He struggled to eat, struggled to sleep. And, you know, we brought him home and it was like it was just a shock to him. He wanted to constantly be moving. He didn't want to snuggle. He didn't want to snuggle in with mom and nurse. Like my other children, my daughter who's one now, I remember her, you know, her first 2 weeks of life, she slept 23 hours. With Cooper, his first weeks of life, he slept 6 hours in a 24-hour period. And I was a first-time mom. I called my own mom, my own mother-in-law, just panicked. I'm like, he doesn't sleep. He doesn't sleep. And they're like, yes, he does. Yes, he does. I'm like, no, he doesn't. I told my pediatrician all my concerns right away. But there was nothing anyone could say. They just assumed that, you know, I was overreacting or he was colicky. And it was a really scary time for me because numerous friends of mine had babies at the same time. And, you know, we'd line them up on a rug on the floor or in a bed. And Cooper was different from the very beginning. And when you have a newborn, an infant, and a toddler, you can pretend or, you know, look over some of those differences. As your child gets older, you can't. I think many of you can relate to that. Cooper's 11 now, and someone will know him within 2 seconds, and Cooper is loud and proud and exactly who he's supposed to be. So there is no hiding. There is no blending in anymore. In the beginning, you can. The first time I heard the word autism, I was in a lunch and learn, which I worked for a nonprofit in Duluth, Minnesota, which is way up north. And I was, you know, I had snuck out of work and I was listening to this presenter, and suddenly they started talking about this autism thing. And they were listing some of the things they listed were Cooper, some weren't. And as I was listening, I started to panic and I had to get out of there. I had a fight or flight experience. And I stood up trying to sneak out and my chair slammed against the back wall and suddenly everyone was staring at me. And I had to get out of there and I ran to my office and I spent the whole afternoon Googling autism. And I was like, there is no way this is Cooper. And and I convinced myself. I found a little old thing called the MCHAT, which I'm sure many of you know, and you can get many different answers to this online diagnostic tool about autism. It depended on the day. From then on, I would sneak over on my lunch break to the library, and I would grab books on autism, and I would hide them behind another book. So I would kind of layer them on each other and read about this disorder. And one day I was sitting in there, and I found myself in the kids section, and there was a toddler time. It was like 18-month-old, 2-year-old kids in there, and they were talking and they were playing and they were coming up to me as a stranger and showing me things. And in that moment, I knew that my son was autistic. And it was a very low point for me because no one would take me seriously, and I didn't know how to help him. I call that the in-between space, and a lot of parents live there for a long time because autism is different than Down syndrome, different than other disorders, because there is no black and white answer. If you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. Girls are different to diagnose. It's so hard to know. And I felt like I was fighting for a diagnosis that I didn't want my child to have. So I'd go to the doctor and I'd be like, I think it's autism. And they're like, no, he's a late bloomer. He's a late talker. And I'm like, okay, maybe you're right. And then I wanted them to be right. So it was a very confusing time for me. And I would have days where I was convinced he was, and days I was convinced he wasn't. The day Cooper was diagnosed with autism, it was a pretty long mouthful. Level 3 severe nonverbal autism with a language impairment. Later, he got an intellectual disability, and then anxiety, and then ADHD. And it all stacked upon him. And, you know, I think a lot of you can relate. If your parents, you look at your 3-year-old or your 2-year-old, and you're like, that's a pretty heavy thing to put on this little one's shoulders. And I try to remind parents that the diagnosis doesn't change your child. They're the exact same person they were before. It wasn't given to them by a doctor. I definitely felt different. I felt like people looked at us differently. They reacted to us differently. And I had this theory, and I've heard this from other parents too, I'm gonna catch him up. We're gonna get to kindergarten and he will be caught up. I set this goal for ourselves that I would teach him everything that I possibly could. A lot of pressure on parents. I know a lot of moms and dads feel that way, grandparents. We shouldn't, because it's not a race against time. Our kids are lifelong learners. But we have to remember, from the second our kids are born, they're being measured and compared by all their peers, right? I mean, you go to the doctor at 2 weeks old, your baby should be doing this. They should be doing this at 6 months old. They should be doing this at this time. And it's a lot of pressure. Cooper at 11, I don't look at those lists at all anymore. But it takes parents a while to realize that they don't have to do that anymore. I like to share these pictures because I think pictures are really powerful. So that one on the left, Cooper was a hoarder for a lot of years. We could call him a collector and say that's a cute way of saying it, but he was a hoarder. Hundreds, thousands of items he would gather up around our house. He would find them and he would lay them out, and no one could touch them or step on them. That light behind us, see how the lampshade's crooked? He would break the light bulbs because he'd want the lights out. You see how there's nothing on my wall on the right-hand side? It's because he would take things down and break the glass to get what was inside. We had locks on every door, 3 locks on the external doors, window alarms, door alarms, locks on the bedroom doors because he would strip beds. Eventually, our world got really, really small. And I know a lot of you parents can relate to that. Our home was not our safe space. We would have to eat with headlamps on, which I think is a Midwest thing, but a headlamp is like a light bulb on your forehead. Like, think of like an old time miner, because the lights had to be out at all times. And in the winter, it's dark all the time in Minnesota. So we would cook with headlamps on. We would eat with headlamps on. Cooper started every day at 3 a.m. And I can say all these things now with a smile on my face and energy in my voice, but I want you to know that at that time, I didn't have a smile on my face and I didn't have energy in my voice. I was at a really low place. And we actually had a social worker come in and say that Cooper had the most severe case of autism they had ever seen. And that was one of the most crushing statements I had ever heard. This is Cooper's first time trick-or-treating. That is a cute picture. It was not a cute time. it was a really hard time. And I share this photo because I tried to do so many things that I wanted to do with him. Birthday parties, trick-or-treating, carving pumpkins, opening presents, birthday parties, whatever it may be. He wouldn't do any of those things. And I think what I want to say here is it's okay to want to do those things with your children. It's okay to want to have the tooth fairy come, and it's okay to want to do family photos. For a lot of years, they might not work out, and being sad over those things is very normal. So don't let anyone ever shame you for being sad that, you know, you can't do things that other families are doing. I still struggle with it a lot less, but you know, when I see families going to Disney and going to sports together, it stings. And I think it's really important to say that out loud and know that that's normal, and then that talking about it is healthy. Isolation is the silent killer of families with special needs, and most of the world has no idea. I share that sentence because I worked outside my home, and my days started at 3 a.m. and ended with Cooper, you know, kicking me and hurting himself before I got him on the bus. And I would get to my desk at 8 a.m. and I would cry because I was so exhausted and I hadn't slept. And Fridays, I would get home at whatever time, 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and the three locks on the doors would be locked, the alarms would be set, and we couldn't leave till Monday morning. I have stories where we would have to go through the drive-through to get milk because we couldn't go into a store. I would have things delivered from Amazon for my other son because I had such terrible guilt that we couldn't go play and we couldn't go outside, but it just wasn't safe. And if you are a mom or a dad in this isolation, please know that I see you, and you need to find people. You need to bring people into your life because it's a really lonely place to be. We got lots of future predictions about Cooper. The one that I said earlier, your son has one of the most severe cases of autism I've ever seen. There's no way you can do this forever. I was told your child will never talk, ride a bike, or make a friend. And I was also told if a child doesn't speak by age 4, then game over. These predictions should never be made. I hope that they're not being made anymore. But we were told some really awful things. And I think I never let it limit Cooper's potential, but I let it break my heart. And I don't let this happen. I know that's easier said than done, but people will say things. No one has a crystal ball. I have surrounded myself with families who have adult children just like Cooper in their 20s and their 30s. I have met two adults with autism in their 20s who have started speaking at age 23 and 25. First words. I know an adult with autism, very similar to Cooper, who can live in his parents' basement and throw a load of laundry in and make chicken nuggets. I mean, that's amazing. He can shower, he can do all these things. They didn't learn those skills on time, but they had parents who never gave up. So remember, no one has a crystal ball. When Cooper reached his hardest days, it was time for me to make a change. There was no more pretending autism was going away, but the change needed was not for Cooper this time. It was for me. And I think it's important to know that, you know, I wrote a book about it. I thought when autism was said, it was Cooper that, you know, this huge, all this stuff was going to happen to, right? It's actually going to happen to you too as the mom, and you as the dad and the grandparent and the siblings. You're all going to change. You're all going to grow, and know that you're going to become the people that your child needs you, or the person your child needs you to be, but it's going to take time. I was missing my son's life, and I think this is a really important thing to say. I lived in this place where I was like, I will be happy when I get him talking. Once I get him sleeping, I'll be fine. Once he's potty trained, this is going to be so much better. And yeah, I mean, that's human nature, right? It's human nature. But what was happening was I was missing the day to day. I was missing all the joyful parts, waiting for things to change. And I recently did a presentation with Carrie Cariello, who is one of my favorite writers. Her son Jack just graduated from high school and he's going to college. He's autistic. And we were asked, what advice would we give parents of newly diagnosed kids? And of course, there was, you know, someone that was like, build a village. And one was like, never give up hope. And mine was, try one more thing. Do you want to know what hers was? Smell their baby heads. Give them cookies before dinner. Let them stay up late because they're going to grow up really fast. And that has been so powerful to me. And I wish that I would have learned it sooner. Slow down. Stop trying to change them. I know there's hard parts, but remember to enjoy the beautiful parts of this child, because Cooper's 11. He's like a tween. And like last night at horseback riding, I was trying to motivate him to do something and he shushed me in front of everyone. He was like, shh, shh, because I was annoying. I was his annoying mom. So they're growing up. It may not seem like it, but they're growing up. Okay, I'm gonna share, this is the video that makes me super angsty. I'm gonna share it for you. This is a caregiver in crisis. And I like to say, I no longer feel this way at all, but this was the realest thing that I have ever recorded, ever done. And I think it's really powerful.
I wanna talk about something that I think all my autism parents will understand. I want to talk about the last time, which is a funny phrase, you hear it a lot, like the last time you'll pick your child up, or the last time you'll nurse your child, or the last time they'll hold your hand. There is a last time in the world of special needs parenting that I don't think anyone else would get. There is the last time you think that this is going to be okay. What does that mean? Yesterday was a really rough day in our little autism world, and I couldn't sleep at all. Tried to take Ezequiel, my brain would just not shut off. And you know, Cooper lives in his own little world in our home, and he is safe, and he is happy, and he is healthy, and he is a complete joy. But there are times when we have to leave that world, and we have to go and do things. And when we do, I plummet after. I try to adequately prepare myself. I think that I know what I'm doing. I got this. I take all the precautions. I prepare for autism. We prepare for World War III. We're ready. We go. And then you're standing, waiting to meet Elmo, and you look to your left while holding your 65-pound, flailing, screaming, head-hitting child. And you see all the parents in line holding their adorable babies. And you see them out of the corner of their eye whispering to their spouses. And I know that's human nature. I would stare too. There's no anger in this statement. And you realize that this is not okay. It's not. I'm not gonna lie to you. You know, when Cooper was 2 and 3, we could fake it. My son has severe autism. And I cried the whole way to work today because somewhere in the last couple months, I switched from praying that he would be a doctor or a lawyer. And now I just know that we're praying for quality of life. And that is such a hard switch because you hate yourself for giving up hope, but it is the fact of the matter. He could be the one in the million, but he's not. And I know that his joy is supposed to be enough. It is a lot of the times, guys, it really is. But last night, I laid in bed, and I thought about his funeral, and if I'm gone. And what if no one goes? He's not gonna have anyone, and, oof. You know, it's just really hard, and I'm not a religious person, really, and I did the thing where I let my guard down and I talked to God and I said, I'll do anything if you just fix him or help him. But that doesn't do anything. It really doesn't. You know, for so long, I kept thinking, and I hit it, I kept thinking it was gonna be okay. I kept thinking he was gonna, I knew he would have some big career or, and I'm like, it's okay if he's a loner. It's okay if he's happy fixing bikes or working on trains. I don't care. I just want him to be happy. And most of the time, that is enough as a mom to know that he's truly happy. And as I talked to Cooper's dad last night, I told him, this isn't okay. And he's like, no, it's not. And he told me he's afraid of when he's 180 pounds and kicking us and lying to see Elmo. I just feel like we're never going to be able to leave our home. The secret world of autism is unbelievable. And you want to know what I think about? I think about the ulcer that I'm getting. I think about what this has done to my body, my stress level. I can't sleep. I'm going to go into work today, and half of my staff was at that Elmo thing, and I'm going to get those. I don't know how you do it, girl. You're so strong. And they mean well. And I guess I didn't know I had a choice. You just do what's given to you. You just keep going. You keep moving. And you keep fighting. And then I sat down last night after just a day of dysregulation and hitting and kicking, and I just thought about when I made that switch from being a blissful, happy parent to thinking about the future in a completely different light. It's brutal. It is effing brutal. Hot mess. Okay.
Okay. That video makes me super uncomfortable. But I think it's a really important thing to share because I had no help. There was no one that was helping me carry the weight of autism. And everyone, if you talk to anyone, they're like, just ask for help. Just ask for help. Well, who's supposed to help you? You know, I was living as a single mom, and my husband, ex-husband at the time, but husband now, was very helpful, but not when it came to the worry. And I am Cooper's person. I still am today. I say that we're tethered to each other, and it's a lot of pressure to be someone's person. It means, you know, when you're in a doctor's appointment and he's having a meltdown, I'm the only one that can calm him. It means a lot of different things. And these are the caregivers, you know, when I was in that moment, we called crisis social work, which is a thing in Minnesota. And, you know, we need help. We got 15 minutes once a week. A crisis social worker came in our home and gave us a few tips. But it's a really scary thing to be. So what I want to say is if you are in crisis, the best thing you can do is find another mom that's been there, done that, went through it. Find a group, find someone, because you need to be able to talk about this stuff. Otherwise, you're going to pour your heart out on the internet. And I don't recommend that. I was angry. I was a really angry person. I was, you wouldn't know it now. And I don't even know if you would have known it then. A couple months ago, I interviewed a videographer to do a video of an event I was having, and I was telling him about our life, and he said, well, there's no way that's possible. That could have been possible because you're just way too happy. You're way too much of a happy person. And I think the strongest people carry it really well. And I'm going to go ahead and guess a lot of you moms carry it really well. If you're living in that angry place, you have a choice. You got to set it down. Otherwise, it's going to break you. And I see moms, I see adults that have children that did this alone for a long time that are very angry. And it's not healthy. And it's taken a toll on them and their body and their marriage and their relationships. Set that down. People often ask me to tell the story when I realized it was time to make a change. I can't pinpoint it exactly. It was more of an evolution. One thing is I remember no longer caring what people thought about my son. If we went to Target and we were trying it out and he had to sit down and rest in the aisle because he was overwhelmed by the sounds and the smells, we just sat down and I didn't care what anyone had to say about it. I remember no longer thinking of Cooper's life as a race against time. So again, that goes back to those milestones. You know, every child learns this by third grade. Every child learns this by fifth grade. Oh, forget that nonsense. And measure your child against themselves. Set goals. Work towards them. Yeah, Cooper has limitations. Absolutely. You know, we're not even working on using a pencil. We don't care, but we are working on typing. We're not working on tying shoes because he wears slip-ons. There's so many different things that you can modify. Yes, they have limitations, but focus on the strengths that your child does have. For me, there are so many parts to my son's autism and they impact me in different ways. I share this photo because this was back in those dark days and I think it shows autism really beautifully. That's Cooper on that train rug with his treasures. That rug had to be laid out in a perfect, perfect, no crinkles, no wrinkles, no nothing. If a dog walked on it, if we touched it, it was meltdown city. The bed behind him is stripped. Eventually the mattress had to be on the floor. And that's my little son, Sawyer, wanting to play Nerf guns. And he was just outside the door. And that's, to me, is a really powerful image of autism in the real world. There's three sides of autism to me. There's the business side. That's the phone calls, questionnaires, nonstop paperwork. Does your child drink from a cup? Do they do this and this and this? I worked full-time for a lot of years, and I would say 2 hours of every day of my workday was doing these calls and these questionnaires. That's exhausting. Share some of that if you can. There's the emotional side, the worry, the big feelings. That was the part that really weighed me down, and I don't know how to share even today. And then there's the day-to-day, and that can wear on a parent's shoe. That's the not sleeping, the self-injuring, the aggressions. Think of these as three separate parts, and what can you control? What battles can you battle, and what do you need to set down? It's really important to find the right supports and services. Once you do that, you will feel a relief. If you're fighting the school district right now, I guarantee your world is upside down. If you're fighting for a fence for your backyard, I guarantee you're exhausted. We have the right supports and services in place. It took till Cooper was about 10 to get there. It doesn't mean it's not going to change again, but we can breathe a sigh of relief because we have that in place. Make your home a happy place. So if that means putting locks on your doors so you don't have to worry, if that means locking your master bedroom so you can have a hoarding-free place, whatever it is, do that. Another thing that's really important, and please listen, feel the grief and the pain. Special needs grief is a very taboo subject, but it's very real. Feel it. Sit in it for a while. Talk about it. Set it down. Don't do it forever. Don't let it consume you, but feel it. That will help you heal. Give yourself grace. This is so important. There were so many things I messed up in the beginning. There were so many things I did wrong. Grace. When we know better, we do better. Know when to push and when to pull. I had someone say to me the other day on my Facebook page that teaching communication to Cooper was abuse, which I'm still laughing about and perplexed about. I push Cooper in the areas that I can. I push him to ride a horse because he loves it. I push him to communicate because it's so important that he can communicate pain and what he wants to eat and when something hurts. But pull back. I'm not saying push to meltdown. But it's a fine line. We have to expose these kids to stuff. Cooper would sit on the couch and never leave and never do anything. But you know what? He loves water slides. He loves going and doing things. It's scary. So we're his safe space. Push and pull back. Choose your battles. That's another one. Like that, for example, like we're not working with using a pencil. Cooper doesn't want to write and he doesn't need to write because he can type. So choose your battles. Prioritize your spouse and your other children. I think that's so important. I don't know what it's like to be a dad to a child with a disability. I don't know what it's like to be a sibling. Those are big feelings that I'll never understand, but I want to make sure that my husband and my other kids know how important they are to me and that they matter. So I really try to do this. Look at autism differently. This sentence here in bold, my son isn't giving me a hard time. He's having a hard time. When I learned that, that was one of the most powerful switches for me ever. Stop looking at that meltdown as someone that's trying to wreck your day. That's not it at all. It's too bright and it's too smelly and something hurts and it's too people-y. Think about it like that. Behavior is communication. It's a really powerful switch. Find others who live the same life. That has been the most powerful thing that I've ever done, is find the mom I can text at 4 a.m., the one I can call on the phone. Find them. They don't have to be in your city. They don't have to be in your country, but find someone who understands. That's why I started all this. Where is the other Cooper out there? And I found him. Let go of those expectations. Yes, I know you want to have a birthday party and you want to have the perfect family photo. And now I get it. I do too. I'm the same way. But a lot of those expectations, they just kind of hurt and they're not really necessary. Set different ones. Ask for help. There is no medal given out at the end of this for the person who did it alone. I call that the martyr mom. That was me. I'm raising my hand. I was the martyr mom for a long time. I am the only person that can do this. Oh, bologna sandwich. There are other people that can help. Ask for help. And then find what works for your family. This is super important, and it took us a while to figure this out. We had nothing that our family could do together. If we went to a barbecue, we had to split up because Cooper couldn't handle it. If we went to a sporting event, we had to split up. If we went to such and such and such, we'd have to drive separate cars so someone could leave. Find what works for your family. For us, that's boating. And that took us 10 years to figure out. Oh my gosh, Cooper's standing outside my window right now in his swimsuit. Sorry, he's waving to me. It's so cute. Find something that works for your family. And for us, that was boating. And that was something that we could all do together. So whatever that may be for your family, maybe that's having a movie night at home. Maybe that's, you know, getting a kiddie pool and all being able to go in that pool. But find something that brings all of you joy. Because for a lot of years, my now 9-year-old, he would say things like, Cooper needs you more, and let me go with dad so you can stay home with Cooper. And that hurt me because I didn't want him to think of me as just Cooper's mom. I wanted him to know that I was there for him too. So find something that works. And lastly, this is my cheesy part, choose joy. Every morning before my feet hit the ground, whether it's at 3 a.m. or 6 a.m., I take a moment and I pause and I tell myself to choose joy. I'm the only person who gets to decide how I feel. I have a choice. I get to choose. This doesn't mean I don't have hard moments. This doesn't mean I don't cry in the shower because I've never heard I love you. It means that there is something in every day that I can find that is joyful, that will carry me through to the next day. You get to choose, mom. You get to choose, dad, what brings you joy. It was then that I walked bravely and proudly into the land of acceptance. I wasn't pulled in. I didn't crawl in. I walked in happily. And it's so important to know that it's not going to happen overnight. You are on a journey. It's a heavy one. It's uphill. Sometimes you're going to carry your child. It's going to rain. But you will get there. I promise. I share our story and I want you to share yours too. Start a conversation about autism. Start talking about it with your mailman and your neighbor and whoever it may be. It's so important because when we advocate for one child, when I talk about Cooper, I'm advocating for so many other ones. So next time someone's at the grocery store and they see an adult man wearing headphones, stamping their feet because they're not getting their favorite ice cream sandwich, they think, that's like that boy from Minnesota. He's not scary. He's amazing. Let's just say hi. And I think that Cooper is doing this. He is shattering the stigmas, but you can do that too. You can do that. And then once you make it through, this goes back to the very beginning of my presentation. Help another parent. Call them, text them, sit with them. Literally just go to their house so they can shower. Let them take a nap. Just be there. Because you may be the only person that knows what they are going through, and they could be at their lowest point, and no one has no idea. Not even their husband, not even their own mom. No one knew how sad I was. I just needed someone to sit with me. And then as we wrap it up, I just want to share just a few ways that you can do this, how to start spreading autism disability awareness, because it's so important. It's 2022. I think we've moved the needle on awareness and acceptance, but we have a long ways to go. So if you've pushed people away, if you've done that, I did. I'm actually just rekindling a lot of friendships that I pushed away. Friends who had babies the same age as mine, and it hurt me, and I was sad, and I love them, but I was sad. Reach out, talk to your neighbors, tell your coworkers about your child, bring it up at happy hour, whatever it may be, reach out. Invite people into your life. This is a big lesson that we learned. Offer to host. We can't go most places still today, but offer to host. Have a party. Invite kids from the neighborhood. Bring people into your life. Share. You can share a blog post that I wrote. You can share a picture of your child and write about something. You can send my book to someone. You can recommend a TV show about autism, whatever it may be. Share. Teach. I go to my kids' school every year and I read books about autism. It's super simple. I guarantee if you email your kids' teacher, they would love for you to come in and do it because they may not know how to do this. Just go in, read a book, teach. Ask your HR department to do something about autism. It's really quite simple, and most people want to do it. Stop living in secret. Tell friends and family members what you need to be successful. This is super important. We didn't go a lot of places because so-and-so didn't have a fence and I wasn't scared that Cooper would go in so-and-so's bed or whatever it may be. But it really was as simple as asking them for the Wi-Fi password and put their family photos away and lock their bedroom door, and we could go. So tell them what you need. And talk about autism calmly and kindly. Encourage people to ask questions. People are very curious, but adults get nervous to ask. Kids don't. Educate the children. And this is like the most important thing. If you have other kids or if you don't have a child with autism, teach your children kindness. It starts at home. And that is that. Give me a follow on Facebook. Give me a follow on Instagram and grab my book if you can and share it with someone. And thank you so much for being here. I'm not sure if we have time for questions or if we want to ask questions, but thank you.
Thank you so much, Kate. This has been so fantastic, the way that you share your journey and your struggles and the real big feelings that come up and potentially could consume us as people, you know, dealing with something that is so life-altering as a diagnosis. I'm sure that your book is fantastic, and this is just a glimpse into what's in there, so I'm really excited to read it. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining. We are having a part two of this series in July. So it's July 18th. You will see it around. We're going to post. Just be sure to sign on early because there's a limit that we have to put because it just gets too big. So sign on as soon as you see it to get your slot here. And thank you so much, Kate. This has really been fantastic.
Thanks, everyone.